The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Welcome to the Alcohol Tipping Point podcast. I'm your host, Deb Mazner. I'm a registered nurse, health coach, and alcohol-free badass. And today I have Kim Singleton on the show, and we're going to talk a bit about, well, maybe a lot, about drinking and disordered eating, and we're going to get all into it. So, Kim, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk about this topic today.
Yeah, can you give a little intro about who you are, what you do before we dive in?
Yeah. So my name is Kim Singleton. I currently live in Colorado Springs. We are actually moving to Ireland later this year. My husband is active duty military. Kind of threw us for a loop when we found that out. But he's in the United States military, so I'm obviously a military spouse of 10 years. I'm a mom to a 5.5-year-old little girl, and we're expecting baby number 2, a little boy, in June. We did go through over 4 years of infertility treatments and everything, and called it quits last year, and we were pleasantly surprised in October. So lots of changes going on in our family right now. I'm also currently in graduate school for my master's in public health, focusing in on health behavior at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And luckily I'm able to do that remotely anywhere, so it doesn't interfere with this nomad lifestyle. So that's just a little bit about me. I'm also 2.5 years sober. I quit drinking in September of 2019. After many years of struggling with trying to be a normal drinker. So, that's about me.
Wow. Well, congratulations. You do have a lot going on. Exciting stuff.
Yeah. Good things. Overwhelming, but yeah.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I don't even know where to start. So we can start with your experience with drinking, with disordered eating. Like, sometimes they're so tied together. Like, what do you think would be a good place to start?
Yeah, I mean, actually, we can just start with kind of both of them, because they are, especially my experience, they are so quite closely tied together. My drinking and my disordered eating, looking back, obviously, like, started around the same time. About when I was like 15. So I started drinking as a teenager, and it wasn't anything out of the ordinary. Where I come from, it just, teenage drinking it was just kind of, of the norm. I never did get into drugs, although several of my friends close to me did dabble in that. I was just always just alcohol was, kind of my thing. Looking back, like, I know that I suffered from like anxiety and like low self-confidence and self-worth since childhood, and also had bouts of depression. But it was undiagnosed and nothing was really done, in that department. My family and home life were really chaotic around the same time too, as well. I had like a lot of lack of parental guidance. My parents had divorced a few years before that, and I had a pretty stagnant relationship with my dad. It wasn't bad or anything. It just was kind of non-existent. My mom was pretty emotionally unavailable from a pretty toxic relationship that she was in at the time. And that would continue on for 8 years. And I think that just a combination of these things kind of triggered my disordered eating, because I felt like a lot of my life was just so out of control. And that was a way of like, I guess, like me to control things in my life. And then also drinking just helped, numb me out and make me just more, social. I always suffered from like a lot of social anxiety. So it was just a culmination of things. And So ever since my teens, my drinking, I was never really considered a normal drinker. I know this isn't very uncommon in the teenage years. Binge drink is pretty prevalent, but brownouts and blackouts were pretty common for me. I didn't really know that, you know, just like having one or two drinks, you know, is, you know, people do that. It was just always when I drink very hard, and that would continue on into adulthood. And then with my eating, like I said, it kind of just started as a form of, you know, control with like restriction. But I was always of normal weight. And that's like the interesting thing. It didn't start as like, you know, me trying to go on a diet or anything like that. It was basically just in, I'll never forget, I was in chemistry class the sophomore year, and I learned what a calorie was, and, you know, calorie in, calorie out, and stuff like that. And, that's when, and this was back in 2000, I'm 36 now. So this is back in like 2002. I graduated high school in 2004. So social media wasn't even like around back then besides like MySpace. And that's when I kind of started doing like food journals, and I would like write down things that I ate during the day. And it was very innocent. I would see these things in magazines that were really prominent back then. I remember it was like Oxygen and Self magazine and stuff. And I would see these women that were in the fitness industry, and not that I ever like wanted to strive to be in the fitness industry, but I would see what they were doing, and you would see like their meal plans and stuff like that. And I just kind of took that and ran with it. And, this continued on for, you know, years, and I started, you know, running, and now I can see that it was, you know, a form of like exercise addiction as well. But I just thought it was like me trying to be healthy all at the same time. I was, you know, consuming a carcinogen in massive amounts and blacking out. But you're just, you know, so young and naive, and you don't know that, you know, you don't know how toxic these two things are. And how they were both a form of self-destruction and coping mechanisms. You know, you have alcohol that numbs you and, you know, suppresses your feelings, good and bad. And then you have disordered eating as you're using as a form of like self-control, but it can also numb you out, you know, too, to help you, not really help you, but make you avoid your feelings. So that's kind of how things started with me.
And then how did they progress? Like, did you tackle your drinking problem first, or your disordered eating first, or how did you navigate that?
Yeah. So I think that actually, like I said, my disordered eating wasn't anything, I don't want to say out of the ordinary, but there was really no red flags with my family. I didn't lose a massive amount of weight or anything, you know, like that. It was actually what I think really triggered me from going to disordered eating and, you know, maybe like over-exercising to actual eating disorder. And I should mention that I've never been formally diagnosed with an eating disorder. However, there's like 30 million people in the world that, you know, have an eating disorder, and less than 10% of them are ever formally diagnosed. Cause for a long time, I think that I felt like maybe I wasn't as bad because I was never formally diagnosed, you know, in therapy or, you know, inpatient treatment or anything like that. But I was also never honest with my therapist either over the years about things either. But when I crossed the line from a disordered eating to actually what would be considered textbook eating disorder was when I started taking Adderall when I was 19. I was never formally, and Adderall is actually a stimulant drug that helps treat ADD and ADHD. And this is another thing that's not talked about very often as well. And it's very prominent in the college setting. And I've actually realized just from talking and being open about my story that a lot of people use it as a form of like weight loss, especially mothers, you know, for folks that are a little bit older. But it was very prominent in the college setting with me, and I was never formally diagnosed with ADD or ADHD. However, I was legally prescribed it by my doctor, my family doctor. I just went to the doctor. It was pretty easy back then, and, you know, said all these things I was feeling, and he gave me a prescription to Adderall. And one of the side effects of Adderall, I mean, there's a lot of side effects of Adderall, but is suppressed appetite. And I didn't initially go there for that reason. It was more I was very tired and down and lack of motivation. I couldn't concentrate. But looking back, those are all signs of depression. So I should have been treated for depression, but I was given this, you know, stimulant to, you know, cover that up. And once I, you know, it completely changes the chemistry in your brain, and it does, it gives you, you know, a boost of energy. And then it also does suppress your appetite. So I would be going all day without eating very much. And I would be consuming, you know, large amounts of caffeine. Back then I would drink sugar-free Monsters a lot, lattes from Starbucks, and then, you know, eating very little. And then at night I'd be going out with my friends or drinking alone. I was actually in my adult years more of a closet binge drinker, but, and then I'd be, you know, consuming a lot of alcohol. And when you don't eat, when you don't eat and then you're drinking, your blackouts are just, you know, you're so much more prevalent. And, that's kind of where I crossed the line right there. And that's when I kind of did start, getting more into eating disorder behavior, because when you're not eating, you're restricting, but then your body needs to make up for it the next day. And then I would go on these, you know, binges, and sometimes I hate using the word binge, because a binge can be different from person to person. You know, the amount of food that you consume and everything like that. But I'd be feeling like crap the next day because I would be hungover. So I'd be eating food that I normally wouldn't eat. And I should say that I've always been a pretty mindful eater. I've always liked, you know, more healthy, you know, foods growing up. My mom, you know, we always ate a bunch of fruits and vegetables and lean cuts of meat and stuff like that. But the next day when you're feeling like crap and you don't really care and you're tired and you're exhausted and you're coming down from this Adderall high, you just eat whatever. And so this kind of cycle continued on for years. And I was finally able to get off Adderall when I was 25. And basically, long story short, my husband, well, he was my boyfriend back then, but gave me an ultimatum. He knew, he could tell my personality changed and I was on it. I was a lot more, my eyes were glazed over, I was just a lot different. I was a lot flakier. I had a lot more anxiety when I was on the Adderall, and he basically said, you know, gave me an ultimatum. So, I was finally able to get off Adderall after multiple attempts of stopping. And I should say, I do not suggest stopping cold turkey from something like that. You definitely need to wean yourself off that and probably consult a health professional while you do so, because it could be pretty dangerous. And then that was my first bout of sobriety, as I quit drinking and I stopped taking Adderall at the same time. And that was when my now husband, but he went away to, OCS. That's when he decided to go back in the military as an officer. He graduated college, wanted to go back in as an officer. So we spent a year apart. So I stopped drinking and taking Adderall, and I was completely sober for that year. But it was more a means to an end. I knew that we wanted to be together, but I needed to get my act together. And I was bailing out of college during that time. I was in and out of school. And then once I stopped drinking, I actually did super well. I made the dean's list. I mended the relationship with my mother. Like I said, she was in a very toxic relationship. Things were just really going well, but I never considered to never drink again. That just didn't even enter my mind. I knew that I wouldn't take Adderall again, but I figured once things, you know, were going well, then I would, you know, be a normal drinker. You know, I didn't really think I had a drinking problem. So I started drinking again the following year, and I guess I was considered a normal drinker. However, it's always been really hard for me. I've never seen the point of just having one or two drinks. And this cycle of trying really hard to be a normal drinker and having bouts of sobriety here and there would continue on for another decade. I wouldn't stop drinking until I was 34. And that's when I pretty much realized that I can't be a normal drinker. It's all or nothing for me. And I also realized once I was, during my bouts of sobriety, that my disordered eating behavior was very closely tied to my drinking, you know, behavior as well. So, but I didn't really realize how much these two went hand in hand until I fully got sober and committed to sobriety. And I was, you know, in therapy, and I just didn't realize that these two go hand in hand so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that and that brings me to you. And you had posted about a term called drunkorexia.
Yes. And this was actually something that I didn't realize. It was until I got sober. And one of the, I guess, one of my tools in my toolkit, once I fully committed to not drinking anymore, was, you know, at first I just was, just didn't want to drink, you know, that was the my goal each day is just not drink, get through the first, you know, for a few days and the first couple of weeks and the first few months. And then I really started diving into, you know, drinking and why we drink. And I started doing my own research and I found this term called drunkorexia. And it was just, I mean, it completely explained my behavior, you know, over the years. And it's basically, you know, replacing meals with alcohol or skipping meals to feel the effects of alcohol more. And it's very prominent, well, at any age, but especially in the college settings, I should say. And a lot of times, I mean, there's so many risks or, you know, that lead to this, especially blackouts. And that explains the amount of blackouts that I've had over the years. And it's scary looking back, but, and it's not, I feel like a lot of people do that, especially women. I don't want to like generalize anything, but they will, you know, try to like save their calories, you know, for the drinking, or if they want to feel the effects, you know, stronger or, and it's just, yeah, it's something that I just couldn't believe that it was actually, you know, an actual term.
Yeah, and that's where I related so much, and just the whole disordered eating. And I want to make sure I have some terminology right, though. So the drunkorexia is basically a slang term used to describe the unhealthy phenomenon of restricting an individual's diet to little or nothing so that he or she may engage in binge drinking without weight gain. Mm-hmm. And then when we're talking about disordered eating and eating disorders, what's some of the correct terminology to use when we're talking about those?
Yeah, I think that, number one, the term eating disorder really freaks a lot of people out. And like I said, by textbook terms, I would be considered, or I would have considered, you know, having an eating disorder by textbook terms, but there's a very fine line between, like you said, like what's considered disordered eating and what's an actual eating disorder. And it basically is the frequency of the behavior. I mean, that's pretty much it, the frequency and maybe the intensity of it as well. Because I mean, there's a lot of things that are kind of very questionable, for example, like intermittent fasting. That was another behavior that I engaged in, and it's perfectly accepted by society. I don't want to totally bash it. Some people do it for, you know, certain health reasons or whatever, but that is a form of restriction. But when does it cross the line from, you know, restriction to, you know, restriction in the form of disordered eating to an actual eating disorder? Because with intermittent fasting, I should explain, if anyone isn't aware, it's where you're basically doing blocks of time where you don't ingest any food and you're restricting your food intake. Usually it's at nighttime, you know, you'll do windows. So say you don't eat past 6 p.m. or something, and then you don't eat. A lot of people will do like 12 or 16 hours of fasting, and then you wouldn't eat until like 6 a.m. or maybe like 10 a.m. the next day. And then you'll have a window of, you know, anywhere between like 6 to 8 hours to eat your food. But honestly, if you really look at it and be honest, that is a form of restriction. That is a form of disordered eating. But that can also very easily lead to eating disorder behavior in the form of restriction or anorexia.
Yeah. And then I just want to clarify, when we're talking about disordered eating and eating disorders, we're talking typically about anorexia, which is the restriction of food, and then binging, which is what it sounds like, overeating, binging mm-hmm. on food, and then bulimia, which involves purging of food afterwards.
Right. And I think there's a misconception of what bulimia could actually be. So bulimia is you'll restrict food, and then you'll engage in a binging behavior. It doesn't always have to be, you know, massive amounts of food. It could be what's considered a normal amount of food, but then you're going to purge these foods either via self-induced vomiting, or laxative usage, or a big one that a lot of people that we see a lot of nowadays is over-exercising to compensate mm-hmm. for the amount of calories that are consumed. So it could be any of those three things is a way to purge the food. I think a lot of people, especially in the media and movies and stuff like that, you just pretty much see it being self-induced vomiting, but there are other ways to purge food with bulimia. And my personal experience was anorexia and bulimia. And with binge eating, it's actually binge eating disorder is the newest out of all of the eating disorders that have been that have been introduced over the past several years. But that's the most prominent. More people suffer from binge eating disorder than either one, but that's the one that's not really talked about as much. And I know it's associated with a lot of shame. Just as all eating disorders are.
Yeah, I mean, all of this is associated with shame, you know, having a drinking problem and disordered eating. And I mean, all of that is something, it's so common. I was looking up some of the stats, and forgive me if I'm, you can find a variety of stats, but you had mentioned that 30 million people of all ages and gender suffer from an eating disorder. I think you had said worldwide, but that's actually the United States is what I found, which is
really okay.
Yeah. Right. So it's very common. One in five women struggle with an eating disorder. It's actually the number one killer of
aside from opioids.
And yeah, so it has the highest mortality rate of any mental illness. So it's really significant. And like you said, a lot of people aren't diagnosed. The stat I have was that over 70% of people will not seek treatment. Due to the stigma and misperceptions and just like a lack of education and how it gets diagnosed and whatnot. But yeah, so of those women, I just want to point out like 10 million men also have eating disorders.
Right. And that's, I really appreciate you pointing that out as well, because I feel like the media makes it seem like it's more of a woman's mental health, disorder. And I've actually, since I've opened up about, you know, my own struggles last year with, you know, disordered eating, and I've been what's considered fully recovered for several years. But I also noticed I still had some lingering disordered eating behaviors. But anyways, it also helped me connect with a lot of men that are on social media. Not a lot. I would have to be honest, like there's way more women that are, you know, out there talking about this, but it's been so interesting having conversations with these men, because they feel the same way too. You know, they see these men, that are, you know, have a lot of muscle, you know, very lean, especially, you know, now on Instagram, you know, you see a lot of health coaches and people, trying to promote, you know, weight loss, programs and things like that. And there's men out there that see this as well. And just like women, they want to look like that. So it just starts out very innocently. And it just, things progress. And before you know, it's spiraled into disordered eating or even an eating disorder. So I really, you know, I appreciate when men are open and honest about that, but I know it's a lot more difficult. It's unfortunate just because of the stigma, and stereotypes that are out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because this is a podcast about drinking, let's go back to drunkorexia. Because that is where I was like, oh my God, that is what I did. Like, mm-hmm. Well, I guess I should share a bit of my story with disordered eating. Like many young women, I've started like in grade school. I remember being in sixth grade and just looking at the seam of my pants on my calf muscles And I could see it kind of pulling apart because my jeans were tight. And I was like, oh my God, I'm fat, you know? And just like you had that moment. Well, everyone has that moment, but it's just, it happens so young. And then I just remember like doing the PBS exercise shows that were free on TV and then like riding my bike around the neighborhood. And, you know, it just all started then. And it was more like restrictive eating, becoming obsessed with it at one point or the other. And then, I entered, you know, junior high, I started drinking, and like you, it was like, what is the point of one? I did not see the point of that. And so drinking started into my life, and it, I wouldn't say it got especially tied together, but I would later in life be saving my calories for alcohol. I remember I would just be like, okay, I want to have a bottle of wine tonight. So what can I eat today? or totally overcompensating with exercise or punishing myself with exercise. And tried out bulimia for a while in my 20s after college and my first job. And I was working night shift, everything. I mean, my eating habits were so screwed up. And so I would binge and purge and quickly discovered like that's not really working for me, but I thought I'd give it a try because it just seems like it should work, right? And then I transitioned into like over exercising and training for triathlons and running half marathons and compensating that way, and then eating, like you said, eating, being so health minded, eating so healthily, but still drinking. and just the things that we tell ourselves, like I would not drink juice. Like I was like, okay.
Oh my gosh, right.
Right. I could never.
Right. And that's like, I should actually mention, so orthorexia was another eating disorder, and it's very, very new. I actually don't even think that it's part, I don't even know if you can actually be formally diagnosed with it yet, but it eventually will be. I know they're working on that, but that is just when you're so overly like healthy when it comes to your eating, you know, you won't eat certain foods because they're not deemed healthy enough. And so that, I mean, I'm not saying that you had that or anything like that. I definitely did. But that was, you know, certain things I really got into, like all organic and, you know, just making sure, you know, lean cuts of meat, where did my meat come from? You know, stuff like that. So that, I mean, that sounds very similar.
Yeah. And then, you know, going back to the drinking thing, like I initially wanted to quit drinking to lose weight. And that was like a pattern, like, oh, if I do a dry month, I'll lose weight. Or, you know, maybe I should switch from beer to wine. Or, I mean, look at White Claws. I mean, we are feeding into that drink, you know, low calorie drinks, skinny margaritas and cocktails.
Right.
Just so counterintuitive. I wasn't really successful with quitting drinking until I could untie that from losing weight. And I tell people that a lot, like, just eat. Because I just say, like, don't focus on, now I'm just focusing on drinking and quitting drinking, but it's like, don't focus on dieting and losing weight. Just eat, focus on practicing not drinking, make that be your only goal, have that sundae, have the candy, whatever can get you through, because I couldn't do them both. And that's just my experience, but it kind of makes me think, like, if someone is suffering from both an eating disorder and a drinking problem, like, which do you tackle first, and how do you tackle that, and what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I mean, I 100% agree. I wasn't, like I said, I wasn't, it wasn't until I was able to get fully sober and devote, you know, commit to not drinking, that I was able to actually look back and honestly accept that I did have eating disorders at certain points in my life. And I mean, I'm not saying this is true for everyone, but I really believe, like you said, you need to probably more than likely quit drinking before you're able to tackle your issues with food. I just don't see how it could be possible to continue drinking normally. It doesn't even have to be binge drinking behavior, even drinking normally, because even after one or two, you know, drinks, you think differently, you know, and some people, a lot of times will, you know, it'll make them feel hungrier or, you know what I mean? And maybe they would eat things that they normally wouldn't eat, you know, if they weren't drinking, you know, a lot of times people, it'll make, you know, yeah, I definitely had to tackle my drinking first before I was able to look back and take a good hard look and be honest with myself about my eating disorders and my disordered eating behavior. But I mean, like I said, it's different for everyone, but that's interesting that you had the same correlation.
Yeah, I feel like it's brought up a lot of stuff that I've kind of forgotten about. And it's interesting because I've let that go, but I've also kind of let myself go. Like, because I don't drink, I'm 2+ years sober now, but I've kind of been using that as a free ride for long enough, I think, where I'm like, well, I don't drink, so I can eat whatever I want. Like, I don't drink, so I don't need to do this or that. And so I'm finding the balance again between healthy eating and not overindulging.
Right. And there's also like addiction transfer. And I'm not saying like everyone that drinks has an addiction, but if you quit drinking, you could easily fall into disordered eating behavior as well. I know that when I stopped drinking, that's, you know, after a few months, I didn't like relapse or anything like that, but I went back and I was able to recognize, all right, I'm still engaging in some of this restriction, mm-hmm. you know, and I thought it was perfectly normal. Like I said, intermittent fasting, and I never was very hardcore with like, windows or anything like that. But, I would tell myself, you know, I would drink a couple cups of coffee or a couple cups of tea in the morning instead of eating right away when I was hungry. And, you know, looking back, I was hungry and I probably should have eaten, but I was drinking this, you know, I was drinking these like non-existent calories instead to avoid eating, you know, and that's completely normalized, by society, especially social media, you know, and that's kind of it was just little behaviors that I noticed once I got sober. And like I said, it took a while for me to notice these things, that I started engaging in again. I started becoming very borderline obsessive with, you know, what I was eating. And, you know, cause I was like, oh my God, I was consuming this carcinogen for all these years, trying to clean up, you know, making sure everything was like organic. And, you know, that's when it just kind of manifested from there. And then that's when I kind of really started digging around into the correlation between drinking and eating disorders. But also, when a lot of people quit drinking, they will, you know, you hear about like they joke about like becoming like addicted to sugar. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, at least it's not, you know, alcohol, a carcinogen, or, you know, things like that. And I agree, I do. But I've been kind of attacked by this actually too on social media when I've talked about this, because I'm like, yes, I completely agree. You need to just do whatever you can to like not drink and get through that, so you're able to come to a place where you're comfortable with, you know, whether you identify as a sober person or being alcohol free, whatever, you know, but be comfortable in this, you know, new role that you have in your life of, you know, being alcohol free. But at the same time, I don't really encourage anyone to just, you know, eat whatever they want or consume all of the sugar, because that can really set someone up that has a history of disordered eating for, you know, something that could turn into, you know, an eating disorder down the line.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I'm glad that you brought up transfer addictions, because I've been doing just a little bit of research into bariatric surgery patients. So just going back to this connection, so post-bariatric surgery patients, so I guess if people don't know what that is, that's a surgery to reduce the size of your stomach. There's different ways you can do the surgery. But basically for weight loss for obese individuals, and they have a much higher rate post-surgery of alcohol use addiction and disorders.
Interesting. I have read that before.
So something, just something to be aware. I mean, we all have to find that happy balance and what works best for you. What would you say if anyone is looking to change their relationship with food and alcohol?
I definitely think that you need to have compassion for yourself, number one. And really invest, you know, as cliche as it sounds, but in healing. And I'm not just talking about like money towards therapy. I know not everyone has the luxury or the finances to, have therapy, but, just your time, like start researching and start really digging around to the behaviors, that you have, there's a lot of resources out there. I know when I stopped drinking, what was actually before I stopped drinking that really helped was like online platforms. And I kind of have, I don't want to say love hate relationship with social media, but, I think there's a lot of good and a lot of bad when it comes to social media, but it was a very valuable resource to me when I stopped drinking and when I started digging around, into analyzing my own relationship with food. And, that just means, you know, there's like Facebook groups out there. There's a lot of people that you can follow on Instagram that are considered like anti-diet or recovery accounts. There's actually Holly Whitaker. She wrote Quit Like a Woman, and she has talked about the correlation between drinking and disordered eating as well in her book, and then also on her Instagram account. Emily Paulson is another one. She wrote the book Highlight Reel, and she's talked about this as well. Let's see, who else is there? Amanda White. She actually just came out with the book. She is a therapist on Instagram, and she wrote the book Not Drinking Tonight, and that just actually came out maybe about a month or two ago. And she's done a lot of Instagram lives and podcasts about drinking and eating disorders. She actually had an eating disorder, and she talks about the correlation between the two as well. And then Lindsay Hall, you can find her on Instagram. She's a freelance writer, but she was actually one of the first that I saw on Instagram, and I'm not actually even sure how I found her, but she talks more about eating disorders, but she's also talked about her issue with drunkorexia as well. And she's, I love how just flat out honest she is about her drinking and her eating disorder and just how the two overlap. So, I mean, I think that any type of, connection that you can make with anyone, whether it's like through, recovery, accounts, or just, there's a lot of groups out there, Sober Mom Squad, The Luckiest Club, there's some podcasts, called Sober Powered. Jill has talked about this issue before. And then This Naked Mind podcast. I know Annie Grace has touched on, this as well. And, I guess the number one top tip that I have though would be to be honest with yourself and tell someone. I wasn't able to stop drinking until I actually came out and told my mom and my husband how bad things were. And then the same thing with opening up about my eating disorders, because my husband didn't have any idea how bad things were in my past. And just even like behaviors that are considered kind of normal. And I'm like, no, these are actually, they're considered normal because we see them all over Facebook and Instagram, but this is actually a form of disordered eating. And anyone that has an eating disorder or, they have no business engaging in these types of behaviors. So I just needed to be flat out honest with him and tell him certain behaviors so I could be held accountable. So he could be on the lookout if I was, starting to engage in them. And it's just also, I mean, it's very, very difficult, but it's comforting having someone there that knows what's going on and that you can turn to provide, some encouragement and support.
Absolutely. And I will link to those resources you talked about in the show notes.
Okay, great.
Well, gosh, I'm so glad that we're having this conversation. I think, like you said, it's not talked about enough. I mean, just like drinking isn't talked about enough. And just this disordered eating. I keep calling it disordered eating so that that can encompass diagnosis or not. But yeah, I think that just like what I would add to what you said is just like with drinking problems, like eating disorders, like their recovery is possible. You can change and it's not too late to change. So I always like to give people hope that you are not broken and this is something that you can overcome.
Yes, for sure. And it's far more common. I know that a lot of people feel, I mean, well, at least I did, very alone in my drinking, and I try to justify my behaviors over the years. So I could talk myself out of not thinking I had a problem, and same thing with my, you know, disordered eating, but it's far more common than you realize.
Oh yeah. I mean, that 30 million stat in the US, it's right. Common. You know what was interesting? I was listening to the Huberman Lab has a podcast. I'm going to link to that too. He's a neuroscientist and my boyfriend. I'm just kidding.
Oh, wow.
No, he's not. I'm totally kidding.
Oh.
I wish he was my boy. I have kind of a crush on Huberman. It's a running joke, but I love that you thought he was my boy. I won't tell my husband that. I love that. Anyway, he has a podcast called The Huberman Lab. He's a neuroscientist out of Stanford, and he did an interesting episode about disordered eating, eating disorders, anorexia, bulimia, whatnot. And he found in anorexia, interestingly enough, just that specific one, you know, it's been around since the 1600s. And it shows up in every culture, no matter what, even food poor cultures. And I just found that really interesting. It's just fascinating, the science around it.
Right, right. And I should, another book that really helped me, and I love it. And I'm actually rereading it right now, because the first time I read it, I listened to it, an audiobook, and then I read it. And then now I'm like going through and actually like highlighting different things from it. But it's called Anti-Diet by Christy Harrison. And you can find her on Instagram as well. She actually has a podcast as well. And it's, she doesn't talk so much about drinking, but you can see like the overlap of like a lot of behaviors when it comes to disordered eating. You know, and drinking in there, but she goes through the history of, you know, eating disorders and not just eating disorders, but also disordered eating and how it, like I said, like centuries ago started, and then how it kind of started like intervening in American culture as well, like in the early 1900s. And it's just, I mean, it's just fascinating how much it's evolved in it. A lot of times it, you know, changes these diets that people are on. You know, they change forms. Right now we're in this wave where it's not really considered a diet, it's a lifestyle. You know, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change. And that's where we're at right now in society, is it's more of a lifestyle. And but it's, when it comes down to it, it's, they're pretty much all the same. They have all the same roots. So yeah, that's another book that I would definitely check out.
That's great. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to share for our listeners?
I don't know. I don't think so. Just, like I said, these two topics are just far more common than you imagine. Don't be embarrassed or, you know, ashamed. It's conversations like this that are going to, you know, help reduce the stigma. And I mean, that's another actually reason why I'm going back to school, get my master's in public health, is because I want to help, you know, reduce the stigma and just break the systemic, you know, healthcare and financial and barriers, you know, and provide more treatment access, whether it's, you know, inpatient or just having outlets like this for people to become, you know, open and honest, you know, about, because that's honestly the way that we're going to change. It's through connection and being vulnerable, you know, with ourselves and with each other. So yeah, you're not alone.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and having this conversation. I'm excited for you and your future in Ireland. What a beautiful place to go to. And congratulations on your pregnancy and your child and life that you've made for yourself now.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, it'll be, you know, an exciting but stressful year, but all good things, like you said.
Good. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Like I said, I will post all these resources in the show notes. Thank you for listening to the show today. If you like it, please feel free to leave a review, subscribe, and share it with your friends. Share it on social media, and we can help other people together. Thank you. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Alcohol Tipping Point. I'm always here for you guys, so please feel free to reach out and talk to me on Instagram at Alcohol Tipping Point, and check out my website, alcoholtippingpoint.com. Again, I hope you can use these tips we talked about for the rest of your week. And until then, see you next time.
Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced. From the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support, the new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, Super Beats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of Super Beats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to RadioBeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's RadioBeats.com, code DEAL.